guys, exciting week. Rivalry matchup. Hokies are ranked in the top 15, 2-0. So a lot to look forward to this weekend in Morgantown.
Yes. I know there. I have a buddy, Richie Davis, that I've known since I was 5 years old, and Richie's head explodes when we're getting ready to play West Virginia. He loves it. So I know there's a lot of Tech fans out there that feel the same way. There's a lot that don't. But, you know, that's it's definitely more exciting than playing Rhode Island or something like that. And I'll just leave it at that.
College football is people like college football because of rivalries and emotions, yeah, and things like this. You take this game away, there's less emotion. So I'm in favor of playing this game every year. So I'm looking forward to it. We actually went to D.C. with Richie a couple of years ago for that game.
Yeah, that was nuts. That game was great. And the football gods have done the favor of scheduling this game at noon. So I think I talked about this in our game preview, which is already up on Tech Sideline. You know, in 2003, summer of 2003, Tech accepted the invitation to the ACC and then played at West Virginia that following fall. And it was a Wednesday night game. Didn't matter what night it was. it was out of hand. And so they beat up on Tech pretty good. And so, of course,
couches.
Was that when the couch burning thing started?
I don't know if it's when it started at West Virginia, but I know. I mean, I remember the news, staying up and watching the news reports from Morgantown all night, and it was like one of those police chase helicopter scenes where you got the overhead view of everything, and it's like you got there and you're looking down, and there's Morgantown on fire. And
do you remember where Tech was ranked? Wasn't it like third in the country or something like that? Tech was really up there. And so, of course, they played in Blacksburg, even though Tech was gone to the ACC after that. They had two more games they had to do contractually. And they played in Blacksburg the following year, and then they went back to Morgantown in 2005. And that game was also at noon. So this is the second trip to Morgantown since going to the ACC, and they're both at noon. And that's a big help.
Well, noon kickoff on Fox Sports 1 from Morgantown. You guys bring me right to where I wanted to start with this. It's going to be a tough environment in West Virginia. And Chris and I were talking before we went live that a lot of these guys haven't seen not only Morgantown itself, but an environment like this over the last couple of years, because Tech hasn't played a lot of these tougher road games, with maybe the exception of Florida State a few years back.
Yeah, so 2019 is clearly off the table. Excuse me, 2020 is clearly off the table. And, you know, where would they have been in 2019 that had any sort of crowd?
UVA fans were excited about that game, and that was a good crowd for UVA, but
they were at Notre Dame also, right?
Yeah, but Notre Dame is tame. We're talking about the routing,
foaming at the mouth,
hatred. The big thing, you can talk about X's and O's all you want, and maybe this game will come down to that in execution, but none of that stuff will matter if Tech doesn't respond well when they get hit in the head with a Duracell for the first time.
Right.
So they have to be prepared for that. And it's one of those things that's like it's tough to be prepared for something you've never experienced.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going to see some things and hear some things that they've never seen or heard before. And they've just got to plug right through it, you know?
Well, and the advice used to be simple. Keep your helmet on at all times.
That's what Justin Fuente said on Tech Talk Live on Monday. He said, Dax Holifield, you can't be showing off your hair and waving to the crowd. You got to throw the helmet on. Make sure you're staying safe on that sideline. Yeah. Something else that Justin Fuente mentioned is that a few of the coaches on this staff have played at Morgantown. Do you think that can help the Hokies, having guys on that staff that can say, here's exactly what you're going to get when you go to Morgantown?
Only if the players listen. You know, Justin Hamilton's played there.
J.C. Price
has played there.
Justin would have been there in 2003 and 2005. Right. And those 2 years, 2003 was the peak because there was so much emotion because Tech was leaving. And then 2005, it wasn't as bad because it was a noon game, but, you know, it was still enough to, you know, make Marcus Vick do his little gesture to the crowd.
Yeah, you know what we're talking about, right, you young guys? All right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and we have some other interesting pictures from the sideline from that game of Virginia Tech players and the crowd getting into it.
But, yes.
At any rate, how did I even go down?
So we were talking about the environment.
Can a coach help? Yeah, so Justin Hamilton would have been there in 2003, and he was there in 2005.
Yeah.
So he probably has a better understanding of anybody that of what it's like. And I remember, like, in 2004 when West Virginia played at Tech, and I was a senior, and they were ranked seventh, and Tech beat them. And, you know, we rushed the field and everything. Not because Tech beat a top 10 team, but just because it was West Virginia, right, and all their fans were talking so much trash. And I remember going down there, like, they had police dogs on the field between the West Virginia crowd and the south end zone and all of us who were on the field.
Really?
Yeah. I just remember being down close to the south end zone, and I was standing probably in the end zone, and all of a sudden there was just this giant wall of middle fingers and water bottles being thrown on the field at us and everything from the visiting West Virginia crowd. Yeah. So multiply that by around 10, you know, from about, you know, 6,000 people to 60,000.
Yeah, the capacity of their stadium is 60,000.
Yeah, so it's like I said, they're gonna see some things and hear some things that they've never seen and heard before.
Well, we mentioned it's a noon kickoff. Maybe that helps out a little bit. West Virginia fans can't indulge in the festivities as much early on.
It does. So I was working media in 2001, which was, I think, Rich Rod's first season in West Virginia. Tech flattened them. I think they beat them 31-7. And 2003, there was so much demand that WVU did not grant us press access. Now, they let Russian Hokie Ivan Morozov, our photographer, onto the field, but they did not accept a press box request from me. And then in 2005, they did. So I was in the press corps in 2001 and 2005. And something that they used to do at I think all football stadiums, but I remember it most at WVU, is at the end of the third quarter, you have the option to leave and go down through the crowd and be on the sideline for the fourth quarter. And then from there, you walk out the end zone and you do your interviews right behind the end zone. So that's the idea, is that you're doing your thing up there in the press box, you go down, walk in with the team and do the interviews right away. And so I was Tech won pretty handily in 2005. Do you remember the score, Chris?
34-17.
But it wasn't that close. Yeah. Was that the game where...
That was the only game West Virginia lost all year.
Yeah, so wow. One of the details of that game was that they started... Oh, man, I don't remember the name of the quarterback.
Pat Bednarik's kid or nephew or something.
Bednarik. Something like that.
Adam Bednarik.
They started him at quarterback, and then after a while, as Tech ran up a big lead, they switched to Pat White and Steve Slate, quarterback.
Steve Slate was a running back, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember watching those guys going, oh, they're going to be really good, and they were. That was the only, like Chris said, that was the only game West Virginia lost all year. But point being, even though it was 31-17, 34-17, it wasn't that close. Yep. So, you know, we all went down there, and I was standing on the sidelines, and I did get a chance to watch the – I remember a couple of things. I remember Carlton Powell and Vince Hall interacting with the WVU fans.
Interacting.
Marcus Vick style. I have a picture somewhere, which is one of my treasured pictures. That
we should actually frame it and put it on.
Doesn't
the wall.
Really make it out much.
Yeah, we should have had it on the set for today.
Yeah, but I also remember the line of security in between the WVU fans and the Virginia Tech sideline.
Yeah.
So those are my memories of Morgantown.
And to be fair, like, my last two interactions with West Virginia fans have been awesome. Like, I thought they were fine at FedEx Field. I thought they were, the ones I met were great. And when I was down in Charlotte for the Belk Bowl in 2016, you know, the night before the game, I'm at Whiskey River, and all of a sudden I look up and I'm surrounded by West Virginia fans, and then the bar starts playing the West Virginia fight song, and I'm like, what in the world is going on? Turns out that's the West Virginia alumni bar in Charlotte. Wow. They were all there that night to watch the West Virginia bowl game. They were playing Miami that night. So I sat there surrounded by West Virginia fans in Charlotte that night, and they were all great. I think it's mostly the students and locals. But has it calmed down any since then?
That's true. It's been 15 years.
Right. It's been a long time. And now in the state of West Virginia, I mean, West Virginia football is the biggest show in town in the state of West Virginia.
Yeah.
That is what everybody cares about. This isn't like the state of Virginia where, you know, half the people from Northern Virginia aren't even from Virginia. Or Southside Virginia, where I'm from, where half the people are just UNC or Duke basketball fans.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't – they're all, also, by the way, some of those are Virginia Tech football fans, if you want to call a spade a spade.
Right.
There's not really like that – If I feel like if you live in West Virginia, you were born in West Virginia for the most part, right? So you came up on that. And then there's not – I don't feel like there's much bandwagon-ness. to their fan base. I mean, they are hardcore West Virginia football, and this rivalry goes a long way back. I mean, this I don't know what the rest of their schedule looks like, but I mean, this is the game they circle.
Yeah.
They want this game more than any other,
especially probably. With Tech coming in ranked.
Right. So a lot of Tech fans look at this game like, oh God, I don't want to play this game. And West Virginia fans are like, yes, we're finally playing Virginia Tech again.
Yeah. Wow, I totally lost my train of thought. I was going to say, as Chris was talking, I was thinking, I admire the way West Virginia fans, they're all about West Virginia and West Virginia stuff.
No doubt.
And high school sports are huge in West Virginia. I know a guy lives here in Radford, actually, who played high school basketball with Randy Moss, and who was the point guard who was really good that went to high school with Randy Moss, played high school basketball.
No,
dang, I can't remember his name. Played in the NBA. He was called White Chocolate, I think.
Oh, Jason Williams.
Yeah, Williams. So this guy played high school ball. If I remember the stories correctly, he played high school ball with Randy Moss and Jason Williams. So there are people in the state of West Virginia that are just legend, and it's just a really tight state. And I really kind of wish it was that way here in the state of Virginia.
Right.
Well, when you look at West Virginia, there's really no pro team there. You could kind of say Washington sports fall into the state of Virginia. There's really only the one FBS Power 5 college football team, too. So
that's right.
Who else are you going to circle around? I'm hoping that maybe they're a little more tame. We're sending some of our SMA kids up there, a couple to cover, a couple are going as fans. So I told them, don't wear Tech stuff.
Don't mess around. The stories are
true.
Well, I think it's time to get into some actual football. We're going to start with West Virginia in their first two games. Coming in 1-1, they lost to Maryland, blew out Long Island last week 66-0. Can you take that much from those two games? You look at the Maryland game, a lot of mistakes, especially early on, and then Long Island, a team that barely just came up from Division II. You're going to beat them more times than not.
Yeah, I don't think you can take anything from the Long Island game. Long Island was Division II until 2019, and they went 0-10 in their first year as an FCS team.
Yeah.
And when I say people call like FCS teams Division II, that's not true. FCS is what we used to call 1AA, and then there's a division below that that is Division II, and then there's Division III below that.
Right.
So this is a team that up until a couple of years ago was somewhere between Ferrum and James Madison.
Yeah.
At that level. So they still have a lot of Division II talent on that team. So you can't take anything away from that. Maybe you can take something away from the Maryland game. I was surprised West Virginia lost that game. Mike Loxley only has 10 wins as a head football coach.
And like 42 losses?
Some 37, a lot.
It's a lot.
A lot, yeah. And so 10% of his career wins have now come against West Virginia, right? And it was weird because West Virginia had – their defense was ranked fourth in the country last year. And first of all, it's – the Big 12 is thought of as a conference that doesn't play defense and all they do is play offense. And I think there's a lot of truth to that with the exception of West Virginia. West Virginia's offense has struggled the last few years, but their defense has been very good, particularly last year. And I think there's a reason for that because it's because their players don't come from the state of Texas like the rest of the Big 12 players. I think Texas high school football is just so offensive-oriented these days, and I don't think much defense is taught there.
If you watch some Texas high school football film, you'll see a lack of effort in general on defense.
Yeah.
It's a nice way to put it.
And that carries up to the Big 12 schools in that state.
I think so. I mean, even Oklahoma, I don't think we'll ever be able to beat like Alabama and Ohio State to win a national championship because their defense isn't good enough because all their players come from Texas. Anyway, that's another topic.
That's painting with a broad brush.
Yeah, that's painting with a broad brush. It really is. But I don't know. Their defense played poorly against Maryland, particularly against the pass. Gave up a lot of big plays. Some of their better players, or some of their best players, you know, like last year, what am I looking at here? Sean Mahone was a really good player for them last year. Josh Chandler Smedo was a really good player for them last year, and they graded out horribly against Maryland. And, you know, their safeties and linebackers in general just got torched by the passing game at Maryland. Is that a one-off performance, or are they just transitioning? Because they did add some coaching changes in the offseason. Their safeties coach who used to play for West Virginia, who actually would have played in the 2003 and 2005 games.
No kidding.
He left his alma mater to go to Georgia in the offseason. And, you know, he was kind of like served as a co-defensive coordinator. They didn't have a defensive coordinator last year. Their defensive coordinator basically got fired / left over the summer over a scandal. So they had to make their defensive line coach kind of like a co-defensive coordinator who handled the running game, and their safeties coach a co-defensive coordinator who handled the passing.
And didn't
game.
That defensive line coach switch to linebackers coach at,
this year?
Yeah.
Now he's their defensive coordinator after last year.
Yeah.
So that's did they struggle against the pass against Maryland because they lost the safeties coach? Is that going to be a big deal for them? And does this guy, he's now their linebackers coach and full-time DC, but before that he had been a defensive line coach his entire life. And, you know, you prefer to have a linebackers coach or a safeties coach as your defensive coordinator, because linebackers and safeties, they have to understand run fits and coverage schemes and things like that, whereas a defensive line coach doesn't necessarily have to. He only has to understand one of those things. So is this – are they going to be not as good defensively because of that transition on defense? Right. Or was it just a one thing, one game, you know, you're just kind of teething with a new coach in there? And are they going to get back to normal like they were last year starting this week?
Yeah.
I don't know. Still learning about kind of everybody at this point.
Yeah, well, and I'm not sure, you know, with the way Tech has kind of been struggling on offense so far this year. Not, you know, struggling may not be the right word, but just a lack of dynamic playmaking going on the Virginia Tech offense.
Right.
I'm not sure you're going to learn a lot about the West Virginia defense this weekend.
I don't know.
But we don't need to really learn. We're just watching one game.
Right. Yeah, well, I think if you're a West Virginia fan and Tech goes out there and has success throwing the football, and that would be two games in a row where they got torched in the secondary.
Right, it's a bad sign for them.
Right, it's a bad situation, especially coming off last year when they were so good on defense. And you're like, oh, wow, did losing this one coach to Georgia hurt us this bad?
And were they fifth in the country in defense last
year?
Fourth,
I think.
And now, is that an efficiency metric?
No, that was total
defense.
But you know, you can look at the efficiency metrics, too, and see that was a good defense last year. But not so good that first week.
Well, again, four of these quarters are against Long Island, but they've only given up 10 points in their last six quarters of football. The defense seems to be settling in, and maybe even against a team like Long Island, that game can give you some momentum that you can carry into this game.
Yeah, you would think so. The big thing about the Maryland game is their defense did play well for large stretches of the Maryland game, but when they in the stretches where they didn't play well, they were awful.
Just guys
running free, lots of blown coverages and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, and this West Virginia defense, it seems like they've had struggles getting to the big play. They've only got one turnover forced, and that was a fumble against Long Island. They've only sacked the quarterback four times in two games. And again, one of those games against basically a Division II opponent, like you said. So could that help out the Hokies, who have been mistake-free for the most part, maybe continue that trend into this game?
I hope so. You know, turnovers can be kind of random sometimes. Even your best teams with turnovers are always going to have one or two games where you're like, oh, what in the world? You know?
Yeah, you know, and for example, I watched a replay of South Carolina and East Carolina, and East Carolina had them down 14-0 and had the ball towards the end of the first half, minute left to go. ECU quarterback throws the ball. It hits an ECU running back right there, up into the air. South Carolina picks it off and runs it for a touchdown. That's not a great play on defense. The guy just happened to be in the right place at the right time. So he's right. Turnovers can be completely random. So one of the things that Chris and I both watched kind of a highlight condensed version of the West Virginia Maryland game, 24 minutes long, right? And watching the West Virginia defense, Chris, you may know more about this than me. They list three defensive linemen. At times they will rush three. At times they'll have four guys, five guys, six guys on the line. So they can really do a lot of stuff as far as what kind of fronts they show you and that sort of thing.
They've got a bandit position, and Vandarius Cowan starts there, 6'4", 242, basically an outside linebacker / defensive end type. And sometimes you just shouldn't pay a lot of attention to what position a player is designated as on the depth chart. You can go back to the whole Bucky Hodges listed as a tight end thing.
Yeah.
We never played tight end, at least not the last year. You can do that to a certain extent on defense. Like Pro Football Focus this week actually listed C.J. McCray as an outside linebacker for Virginia Tech against Marshall because he
against
was
against Middle Tennessee.
Excuse me, against Middle Tennessee because he was standing up for most of the plays he was on the field.
Yeah.
So I think they listed him. If you're an edge player, they kind of list you as an outside linebacker. If you're standing up, and they'll list you as a defensive end if you got your hand to the ground. But in the end, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
So, yes, West Virginia can be a multi-front defense, which, honestly, Virginia Tech is kind of that way now, too, at times. You could consider the Virginia Tech that to a certain extent. I mean,
yeah, the way they're using Barno.
Yeah. So it's just a more – for the most part, you know, you would recognize the same Bud Foster defense every week with some tweaks here and there. Obviously, there's the exceptions like the 2014 Ohio State game. But I think Tech will be more multi-front now, depending on the opposition. And other teams have been making that switch in recent years.
Well, for the Hokies' offense, you're having to replace James Mitchell this week. First game without him. And against a defense like this, maybe a little bit undersized at a lot of positions, just looking straight up at the depth chart, but have been solid. We're solid last year, coming off a shutout, again, of Long Island. But how do you think the Hokies and Brad Cornelison are going to try and attack this defense, again, without one of your big stars in James Mitchell?
Well, first of all, you know, you've got to figure out, that's like Fuente said after the game last year, Tech has to figure out which areas of the passing game Burmeister and the receivers are comfortable in and what they can get better at. There's no sense in, like, trying to get them to improve on things that maybe they're not going to be very good at.
Don't bang your head against the wall.
Exactly. So they got to figure that out this week while also taking a look at West Virginia and saying, how did Maryland get so many guys running wide open at various points in that game? I don't think Virginia Tech will have to score a ton of points to beat West Virginia.
No, as a matter of fact,
we'll talk about that later.
When we do our picks later, you'll see that they're all pretty low scoring.
Yeah,
but you know, I don't think you can drive 5 yards at a play down the field against them either.
Man.
You're going to have explosive plays in there. When Tech went 96 yards against Middle Tennessee, they got two big plays, right? It was the long pass to Trey Turner, and then a couple plays later, it was Jalen Holston breaking the tackle and going 30-some yards for a touchdown.
Right.
So Tech is going to have to figure out how to generate big plays, and that's not just the West Virginia game. That's every other game on the schedule this year too.
Yeah, so one of the things they put in game notes that I've started to pay attention to, because I think it's going to be a theme all year long, is plays over 20 yards.
Yep.
And the way they list them is they don't just list offense. They list defensive plays over 20 yards, like an interception return or a fumble return. Hmm. They list special teams plays over 20 yards, kickoffs, punt returns, that sort of thing. And Tech had three offensive plays against UNC of over 20 yards. And that's not a lot. They're, you know, and I ran this in my article Monday, through two games last year, they had 20 plays of over 20-plus yards, and Khalil Herbert had 12 all by himself. And then so far this year through two games, the team has 12. And a number of those have come on special teams and defense. Somebody with a good memory can probably reel them off.
Yeah, they would have had two on special teams.
I think Kashawn King had two kickoff returns.
One of them got called back. Yeah.
Right. Tavion had a punt return. Waller's interception return was
over 20 yards.
Right about 20 yards, I think. Mm-hmm. So that stuff all goes into the numbers.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to look at, especially offensively for the Hokies. Who do you think can step up in that spot and make plays? Could it be Raheem Blackshear maybe getting a little bit more run, maybe in the slot as well in this game, just trying to electrify this offense?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. They were rotating the tight ends a lot in there. Dulius has played a lot, Gallo's played a lot, and obviously Mitchell was out there a lot too. But they weren't actually playing Mitchell quite as many reps as you would think.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he wasn't out there like every down against North Carolina. There was a rotation going through there. So I don't think like Tech is going to like, yo, you know what, we're just going to add a third tight end to the rotation. I don't think they're going to do that. I mean, I think the two guys they've got will continue to play. And it's not like, I don't think Tech was playing with a lot of three tight end formations I'm sure that they had some. But I think they'll play Gallo and they'll play Dulius, and I don't think they're going to add a third guy there.
I mean, your options after that are Ty Eller, Cole Blaker,
they're walk-ons,
and I think Jared Gibble,
who's a true freshman,
yeah,
and redshirting, yeah. So, redshirting first one. I mean, to me, it's like, do you play Blackshear a little more in the slot now? Do you play Jaden Pahut more? Those are the bigger questions. I mean, I don't see how just adding just another tight end in there, I don't think it helps. I mean, you've got these two guys. They're solid players, and they can split the reps. Now, you don't want them both on the field all the time. They'll get worn out. So maybe there might be fewer two tight end sets now, maybe, yeah, which means one more wide receiver in the game or something like that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the way they go. But I think, you know, to your question, I think Blackshear's probably the guy with the most potential to make plays in space. But mm-hmm. we've been saying that since last year, you know, and he certainly did against North Carolina.
Against Carolina in the passing game. And
right.
He did it this past week in the running game. I thought he was good in the running game this past week.
And you would think that the injury to Mitchell, maybe it forces Brad Cornelson to be a little more creative with personnel and formations. Maybe you get Connor Blumrick involved at tight end, have him do those jet sweeps that James Mitchell used to do, and stuff like that.
And when we say tight end for Connor Blumrick, that doesn't mean he's going to be lined up on the edge with his hand in the ground.
You will not see that.
You know, you were not
I don't
see
think
that.
He'll be run blocking.
No, he's not going to be lined up and asked to block.
Yeah, he's listed at 215.
You know, if they even take a look at him there at all, who knows? I mean, I wouldn't tip my hand there if I were them. I mean, we'll just have to watch the games and find out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, how – I don't know. Coaches want to win every game, so I won't say what I was about to say. Let's move on.
Well, looking at this this matchup between West Virginia's defense and the Hokies' offense, who do you think has the advantage here? Again, it's very early in this season, but so far West Virginia's had their own struggles defensively, and the Hokies have had a little bit of a slow start offensively outside of that first touchdown against Carolina.
Yeah, you really liked the start offensively for Virginia Tech against Carolina, but like the last – you know, they hit a lull, obviously, the last two quarters of the Carolina game and the first two quarters sort of the Middle Tennessee State game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess Brock Hoffman said it on Monday. David, I think he said something like, what we need is the first half of the Carolina and the second half of Middle Tennessee all combined into one. I think it's what he said to the media earlier this week.
That would be 35 points.
Yeah,
and should have been 42.
Well, you know, points aside, like,
they
what do you look like?
Ball.
Are you moving the football? Are you efficient?
Yeah, that's what I put that in my part of the preview. He just, you know, I think it was David Teal who asked, you know, what have you liked about the offense so far, and what do you think the offense's ceiling is? And he basically said, you know, we have to be consistent. We can't play like the second half of North Carolina and the first half of Middle Tennessee, but if we play like the first half of the North Carolina game and the second half of the Middle Tennessee game, you know, we're going to come out and essentially, you know, run the ball, you know, pick up yards on the ground, you know, like Chris always says, you know, a little bit of smoke and mirrors and get some chunk yardage eventually and, you know, put up some points. And, you know, I think if Virginia Tech can do that, they have a good chance to beat a lot of teams.
And I think you'll certainly see a lot more of scheming to get guys open than you saw against Middle Tennessee. I haven't had a chance to read Brandon Patterson's article, but the word vanilla was in the title. You know, so and I tried not to say it in the article I wrote, but I was just like, it just looked vanilla to me on offense and defense.
I mean, it was even more vanilla on defense than it was on offense. That was like complete base scheme.
Yeah. So to answer your question, you're like, kind of who's got the advantage here? I'm actually not really sure, but I do think that Cornelson will give it his best shot, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend like somebody's going to suddenly show up out of nowhere, like Payute's going to have five catches for 180 yards,
yeah,
stuff like that. I just don't think that kind of thing's going to happen, but I think they know they have a good idea what they have, and I think they'll make the best use of it. Will it be successful? We'll see.
You would assume that Brad Cornelison is going to open this up against West Virginia. There's no holding back against a team like this, Power 5 opponent on the road. You're putting everything out there to try and win this game.
Right, right. I mean, it's not going to be Middle Tennessee game plan where it's just like your base offense for the whole first quarter. You know, they're going to have things in design specifically for West Virginia.
Yeah, and with the caveat that I'm not much of an analyst, just looking at the way WVU lines up on defense, there are opportunities. You know, there are spots on the field where if you make the right call and catch them in the wrong defense, you'll have a big play.
They struggle to tackle sometimes in the alley against Maryland. And Virginia Tech likes to run those screens to wide receivers, so there is some potential yardage there.
Well, we'll see how it goes on Saturday with the Hokies offense. We're going to take a break here on episode 191 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. When we get back, we're going to go through the Mountaineers offense and the matchup with the Hokies defense that has only given up 24 points in two games so far this season. We're also going to take a trip back down memory lane, look at great moments between the Hokies and the Mountaineers over the years, and look at other Hokies rivalries and see where West Virginia stacks up. Make sure you stay with us here on episode 191 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We'll be right back. We welcome you back to episode 191 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, presented by the Southeast Regional Training Center. We're previewing Virginia Tech and West Virginia this weekend in the battle for the Black Diamond Trophy as it's renewed for the first time since 2017. Jake Lyman, Will Stewart, Chris Coleman, behind the scenes Malcolm Stewart, and to my right is David Cunningham. David, before we hop back into football here, we have a little update on Tech basketball.
Yeah, Tyler Nickel, 4-star, 6'8". He's listed as a small forward, but plays more of a wing. He's from Rockingham County up around the Harrisonburg area. He committed to North Carolina. Virginia Tech was one of his final five schools. Virginia Tech, Iowa, you know, and it's for Tech basketball, it's tough because he was a big-time of course, he's in-state, but he was a big-time target, you know, and I think Will and Chris and I were talking about this before we went on the podcast. You know, back in July, I think we had all heard stuff that it sounded like he was coming to Virginia Tech, and just the way recruiting works out, you know, North Carolina got him in last weekend for an official visit, and he committed to Hubert Davis in North Carolina. So that's the way it goes sometimes.
His coaches were convinced he was going to Virginia Tech.
I mean, yeah.
100% convinced. He grew up a North Carolina fan, which, like I said, a lot of people in the
middle
state,
of the state of Virginia.
Nobody in the state grows up a Virginia Tech basketball fan. That's just the way it is.
At least not right now.
Right. I mean, you're going to have to win multiple years in a row to change that and go to Sweet 16s and Elite 8s and Final Fours. But, yeah, you know, Carolina only decided they wanted him within the last couple weeks. And he grew up a Carolina fan, and that was good enough for him. It's unfortunate because Tech did as much as they could. I mean, Tech recruited him very, very well. He was up at Tech for the UNC football game, went to Center Street. I mean, had a great time. Tech recruited him as well as he possibly could, but it's just a blue blood program. Tech's always in the difficult position for basketball is you want to get the best players that you can that the blue bloods don't want. Because if the Blue Bloods want them, they will get them. And there's not going to be anything you can do about it.
Well, and that's something that works out for Tech because they generally keep players 3 and 4 years and they can develop better. Mm-hmm. And something that I think is more pronounced in basketball recruiting, you guys tell me whether or not you agree with this, because there are so few players on a team, so isn't what happened here that Carolina missed out on a recruit at that position?
Yeah, I believe it was – I don't remember the exact player's name, but I'm pretty sure.
I think he's going to Villanova.
Yeah, he committed to Villanova, and as soon, you know, and it because there's so few guys at a position, it's like you miss out on one guy, and it's okay. Well, our next target on the list is this guy. Mm-hmm. Oh, and he's coming on an official here anyway. And I think he was supposed to go visit Iowa like this upcoming weekend. And
the same thing happened to he canceled that visit.
Then announced today.
So he was going to Tech, and there was no close second till UNC came in, and they were first.
And so I think that's more pronounced in basketball because there are just fewer players. Spots.
The same thing happened to Tech when Greenberg was here with Josh Hairston, who was like a 5-star recruit from the Martinsville area. His parents even went to Virginia
Tech. Was he a Duke guy or a UNC guy?
Duke. And Tech was clearly leading. and Duke had not offered him, and he was very, very close to committing to Virginia Tech, and Tech did a great job recruiting him. And then Duke called him and offered him when he was in the car driving home after his official visit to Virginia Tech. That's when Duke offered him. And then he just,
and when Coach K commits, calls you.
Commits. When and Coach his K parents went to Virginia Tech. Yeah. You know, and but so that's the, just the way.
So he has a great visit at Tech. He gets in the car, and everybody at Tech is like, oh, we got him. And they don't know about the phone call right. that occurred.
At any rate, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Okay, let's move on.
Well, we're going to go back to West Virginia football. We've already talked about their defense and how the Hokies can match up with them without James Mitchell. But looking at their offense, they – have gotten off to fast starts in both games, but have also had some issues against Maryland. 4 turnovers in that game. It all starts with Jared Daigie at quarterback. Chris, you've been tweeting, and you put it in your article, that he's not the kind of mobile quarterback that Tech's defenses have no. struggled with in the past.
He's a very good passing quarterback. Only threw 4 interceptions all of last year. So the fact that he threw 2 against Maryland was a little surprising. One was an elite play by a Maryland cornerback in the end zone, and the other was an awful decision by Daigie himself. But, yeah, he's got something like minus 472 rushing yards in his career.
I think it was 423 or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was a lot. Minus 3.2 yards per carry for his career. So, you know, like, I watched the Miami App State game on Saturday night. And, you know, Chase Bryce, the quarterback for App State, who's been at Duke and Clemson and however many other schools these days the guys attend. But he's probably as statuesque as any quarterback is in the modern game. Like, he is not a runner, just not swift of foot at all. But he still has positive – he's still got a couple hundred rushing yards, positive yardage for his career. And he's about as slow as it gets. So the fact that Daigie has minus 400 or 500 rushing yards in his career, that's just incredible to me.
Yeah, you wrote in your preview, 139 carries, negative 432 yards.
32.
That's an average of negative 3.1 yards per carry.
Right, and I don't care if you get sacked a lot. You're gonna have more rushing yards.
He hadn't gotten
that
sacked
if you can
that
actually
much.
Run.
Well, right. Well, in college football, sacks do count as minus rushing yards, yes. Not in the NFL. But
right.
That is definitely something the Hokies will have to look at. Is that maybe, unlike against North Carolina, when Amari Barno was dropping into coverage or maybe being a spy, you have him and Tywan Garbutt just pin their ears back and go.
Yeah, and
right.
And do you blitz more often? Now, I don't think you have to worry too much about playing. You can man up more if you feel like that's the right thing to do, because he's not as much of a threat to run. He's no threat to run, to be quite honest with you. Now, what are they going to do, though? Like, they did get Garrett Green, their backup quarterback, into the game early against Long Island, and he had 14 carries for 98 yards. Yep. But he's also a 5'10 redshirt freshman who never threw for more than 1,200 yards in high school. And West Virginia has good receivers, so it almost seems like if you take out Daigie and you bring in Garrett Green, a 5'10 freshman.
It's almost like a wildcat offense.
Right, it's almost like you're
going to run the ball every
time. You're going to run the ball, and if one of your strengths is your wide receivers, you kind of negate your strength.
Right.
So it's a balancing act.
WVU's leading rusher is Letty Brown.
Yes, and we'll talk about him.
32 rushes, 104 yards. That's only 3.3 yards a carry.
So did he really get shut down this past week against Long Island?
I'm not sure what the deal there was, because he had some plays against Maryland.
Oh, well, he had 70 some yards against Maryland and had a decent average.
73 yards, 2 touchdowns against Maryland.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So they
probably just didn't play him very much against Long Island.
But he averaged He averaged over 4 yards per carry against Maryland, which means he got totally shut down by Long Island.
That's kind of weird.
But he's a guy who averaged over 100 yards a game.
He had 15 carries against Long Island.
Right.
How many yards?
15 carries, 31 net yards.
Right, right.
2 touchdowns. But
that's kind of bad. Yeah,
they have not been good in run blocking this year.
Well, maybe he went out the night before on the town and just didn't feel good.
Not too worried about the Sharks.
The thing is, though, like he averaged over 100 yards a game last year. And was an all Big 12 player. And he is a very physical runner. This dude's a load. He's a good back. He might be the best back Tech faces all year.
5'11", 216, which is like prototype college running back size.
So when Tech has to put their big boy hats on when they tackle it.
Yeah.
And they need to get him somewhere around the line of scrimmage before he gets ahead of steam and gets running downfield, because he can be a load there. I think if Tech stops him, they'll win the game. Because, like, if they shut him down, then, like, I don't feel like the rest of the offense is balanced enough. Like, if Daigie's the quarterback, all they'll be able to do is throw it. That's it. Whereas if you bring in Green to try to get somewhat of a running threat, then, okay, maybe, yeah, your quarterback can run the ball a little bit, but now you can't pass it.
So the big thing that worries me, and again, we watched the same 24-minute kind of recap of the Maryland game, and the problem with that is when you watch that, you see all the highlights for both teams. You don't see the plays that get stuffed at the line, right. You know. So if you watch that, there are parts of the West Virginia offense that look very dynamic. They run some tunnel screens. They run a lot of action crossing across the middle. And that stuff can get hard to defend. You know, how is Dax going to do against that?
That crossing stuff over the middle is probably, you know, you run a risk when you're in man coverage. You know, if there are some pick routes in there, you run the risk if your man gets loose on a pick route, then that's going to be a huge gain. So I suspect they do those crossing routes to try to keep teams, you know, in zone maybe to a certain extent. Maybe that makes it easier on Daigie. I don't know. But
I know they have the potential to be explosive.
Yeah.
But you get back. So it's one thing to watch highlights and then hear the numbers where it's like 300-some yards of offense. That's okay.
I expect the West Virginia offensive coordinator is getting cussed out by fans on message boards right now because he doesn't – there's not a good decision here. You're never – like, Daigie can't run at all. He's like the least mobile quarterback in the country.
Either way, you're one-dimensional.
Right. And the other guy has no experience passing the ball. He's a 5'10 freshman. How good is he really going to be throwing the football? So if you could combine them together, you probably got a really good offense, but you can't. And there's going to be an element of give and take, and it's really difficult to find that proper balance. And it's one of those things that offensive coordinators have to try to find a lot of people are going to be unhappy with them either way.
Well, in the modern college game, it limits your offense if your quarterback is not a running threat.
Yeah.
It takes the read option out of it. He's just handing off for the shotgun.
Well, and not just the read option, the scramble, too. Like, UNC doesn't run, like, a bunch of read option with Sam Howell, but he can still run the football. Like he had over 100 yards rushing this past week.
Yeah.
And he had, you know, he had some solid gains against Tech in that game. So you have to regard that guy as a threat to a certain extent, even though you know he's not going to have 15 carries and not going to run the read option, things like that. You at least have to regard his scrambling as a threat, and I don't think you have to do that for West Virginia when Daigie's on the field.
Well, as a matter of fact, we saw one of the interceptions he threw was a terrible decision while scrambling.
Yeah.
And then he didn't wind up turning it over here. He made another bad decision and threw into coverage, but the ball was dropped. Mm-hmm. So, not being real familiar with him, does he make bad decisions when he does scramble? Because he's not going to run, so he's like, well, I have to throw it. You know, we'll find out more on Saturday.
Well, you would think the reason they do start Daigie, you mentioned it, is their wide receivers are the strength of their team. They have 6 receivers with 60 or more yards in 2 games. 4 of them have 97 or more. For comparison, Tech has just 3 receivers over 60 yards through 2 games. So not only do they have good wide receivers, they have a lot of them, and they can spread the ball around, which could be something to look at in Tech secondary.
Yeah, you know, Winston Wright, we'll talk about him more later. Sean Ryan, Bryce Ford Wheaton is a big target on the outside. You know, you could list all of them, but there's no point. But, yeah, you know, they're going to have 5 or 6 receivers in the game. And there will be times when they will actually have a 5-wide receiver formation.
Yes, I did see that.
Right. But sometimes that's also one of those receivers is Letty Brown. Like, he'll line up and then he'll split out. Now, he had 31 catches for them last year. He is a receiving threat.
Yeah.
As well,
and their receivers run the gamut. I mean, they got the fast slot guys. They've got the big guys who can win the jump balls.
Yeah, they've got the whole. It's kind of clear who their outside receivers are and who their slot receivers are.
Yeah.
Well, and could this be a game? We mentioned it in the North Carolina preview that Chamari Connor, Daz Newsom kind of got him over the last couple of years. Could this be a game where maybe they line somebody up in that slot that could go after Connor most of the game?
Yeah. right.
Winston Wright.
Yeah, is probably, you know, he's 5'10", 180 pounds, junior. Dynamic kickoff returner, really quick guy. So yeah, I mean, I would look for them to try to get a matchup advantage there.
So here's, so for some of you who wonder why we in the media, quote unquote, sometimes make mistakes, I cut and pasted the roster from their site, and Winston Wright Jr. on their roster is 5'9", 180.
Oh,
in their game notes, he's 5'10", 180.
It's the same thing for their left tackle, Brandon Yates. In their game notes / depth chart, he's 6'4", 295. But on their roster, he's 6'3", 295.
Yep.
So they're adding a few inches, taking a few away every once in a while.
You know, Doug Nestor grew an inch since last year, just like Luke Tenuta grew 2 inches for Virginia Tech since last year.
Well, you mentioned Doug Nestor. Looking at that offensive line, 3 sophomores on the line. Again, COVID sophomores, so they're basically juniors, but they have struggled a little bit, especially run
blocking. The thing is, like, West Virginia is not making COVID designations for their year on their roster. Like, okay. Doug Nestor is listed as a junior on their roster, which is what he's in his third year.
So,
right? If he was still at Virginia Tech, Virginia Tech would still be listing him as a sophomore.
Interesting.
But what I've noticed is that West Virginia – yes, those players will still be eligible, but West Virginia is not going to confuse anybody, which was what I actually like.
And I will say this, when I went to cut and paste, so I get the other team's entire roster off their website, and then I got to trim it down to 86 guys. And I encounter teams where there's 110, 115 guys on the roster. WVU, there's only like 98 guys listed on their roster.
Mm-hmm. So having a little bit of youth on that offensive line, you mentioned in your preview that there's been some struggles, especially in the run blocking game for that front.
There has. They really struggled against Maryland. Obviously, they struggled again to a certain extent this past week. Maybe not so much when the backup quarterback was running the ball, but you know, if a back the caliber of Letty Brown is only averaging 2 yards a carry, and I'm telling you, this is a good back.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for him to average 2 yards a carry against Long Island unless they're having some struggles up front.
Well, and in the Maryland game, they only ran for 48 yards net. Again, some of those probably sacks.
Certainly, I think he had minus 25 rushing yards.
So a little bit skewed, but again, the running game has not been great for West Virginia early on. Could be a strength for Virginia Tech in that game. You mentioned special teams with Winston Wright.
Yeah.
I want to jump into that. The Hokies had a few big plays in special teams against Middle Tennessee. That could be the difference in this game. All of your predictions, low scoring in Chris's preview article on TechSideline.com. So one big special teams play could really break it open.
But, you know, besides the obvious, you know, every week we sit here and say for like a game that seems like it's going to be close, it's cliche to say turnovers and field position and special teams are going to be decisive, right? Say that on all big games. But let's dig a little deeper here. And when I say something is going to be, like when I say special teams is going to be important, I'm looking at the kickoff team. Winston Wright Jr. had a 98-yard kickoff return to set up a touchdown.
Not for a touchdown.
To set up a touchdown.
Usually you hear that and you're like, oh, touchdown.
He must have scored. And then he had another one of about 50 yards, which they immediately turned the ball over after that.
And if I remember on that one, he made the mistake. He brought it out to their 45, and he stepped out of bounds. He was still in the clear. So it would have been a lot longer than
right.
And if I'm remembering the right play.
The point I want to make is he brought both of those out like from like 5 yards deep in the end zone.
Yeah.
So this is a guy who is a big play threat. He's a high-risk, high-reward guy on special teams. He can absolutely return 198 yards from 5 yards deep in their end zone and set up a touchdown. But at the same time, if you've got good kickoff coverage and you're disciplined and you stay in your lanes, and if he does that, you might tackle him in like the 16 or 17-yard line and get great get a great field position advantage.
I think in looking at their list of 20 plays of 20-plus yards, he had a couple of 20-yard kickoff returns.
Right.
So, yes, if he's bringing it from the goal line or in the end zone and only getting 20 yards, that's a win.
That's right. That's right.
For Virginia Tech.
From a field position standpoint.
Yeah.
Now, that said, if he breaks one, that wins the game for you right there. Now, he also fumbled a punt return in this game. So, like I said, this guy's very much boom or bust, it seems like.
So far.
And I also want to point out that in Virginia Tech's kickoff return, you know, Kashawn King is going to have some opportunities in this game. 11 kickoffs this year for West Virginia. Only 2 of them have gone for touchbacks. One of them was actually kicked out of bounds, too. So, they don't have a very good kickoff guy. So, Kashawn King, who looked sharp last week returning kickoffs for Virginia Tech, and Justin Fuente doesn't believe the play they got called back was a penalty.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He said a defender kind of tripped up, and Duilius was engaged with him when he tripped up, and it made it look like Duilius held him.
Did they call a holding?
Yes. Yeah. So, but either way, you know, Keshawn King, I think he showed good vision and everything like that on his kickoff returns. He will have an opportunity against West Virginia. So it's possible that one kickoff return could swing the trajectory of this game.
Yeah. So when you got a couple of teams that are, it's a high scoring game, it's a 49-42 type of game, special teams, the importance of special teams is diminished. Yes. And what I mean by that is when you have two offenses like these, which have not shown the ability to be very explosive, it's very difficult for these teams to drive the length of the field. So if you get a good play on special teams or a turnover, mm-hmm. you're spotting them a lot closer to the goal line. And if teams aren't capable of really moving the ball effectively, that's a bigger deal in a game like this.
And what I like is that Fuente's good at playing that game. Yeah. We showed it against North Carolina.
Yeah.
And, you know, he showed it at times in the past. For a guy who was a former offensive coordinator who was considered an offensive-minded coach when he was hired, he's always shown that he has a very good grasp of how to influence the outcome of a game with special teams and how certain, you know, offensive game plans can help the defense. Very Frank Beamer-esque from all that standpoint. So, this is one of those games that, you know, a kickoff return could potentially decide it. And I spent all that time talking about it. Now it probably won't. But keep that in mind as you watch the game.
Something like a defensive score, for example, could be huge.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mentioned it that all of your predictions in Chris's preview on TechSideline.com, close, low-scoring games, special teams could play a huge factor. For the third week in a row, I want to go around the room, all three of you, Chris, Will, and David, and get your keys to the game. What do the Hokies have to do to head into Morgantown and win this rivalry matchup?
Well, turnover, special teams, blah, blah, blah. Let's get that out of the way. But to me, the most important thing is, need to be mentally involved. And I'm sure when they get off the bus up there, when they stay at the team hotel the night before, they're going to be mentally into it. But like I said earlier, even the older players on this team will have never played in an atmosphere like this. And I'm not talking about pure number of people in the crowd. I'm talking about the negative waves.
What's
they're going
to
be coming towards
to
them. Right, yeah. Like when they feel that Duracell ping off the side of their helmet for the first time, how are they going to react? Are they going to lose it? Or are they going to buckle down? If they lose it, then all this other stuff we just spent time talking about for the last hour and a half is not going to matter.
Yeah, it could get out of hand quickly.
Well, and a lot of young guys not playing in full stadiums last year, that could play a factor as well, as this is the first true road environment that anybody who joined the team after 2019 is playing in.
But I looked, with an eye towards trying to figure that out, I looked just at the starting lineups, and there really aren't many guys that play key roles for Tech that haven't played in front of crowds.
That's correct. Dorian Strong is the main one, but I have complete
but
trust
he's a defender. Deontay Jenkins as well.
Yeah. I have complete trust in Dorian Strong.
Yeah. So I think, and you're going to correct me if I'm wrong, I think these are bigger issues for offensive players. If you have a young quarterback who's never been in that environment.
Or a kicker.
Communication issues or a kicker.
Kicker or a snapper or a holder. Now, Peter Moore, Virginia Tech's starting punter, is a true freshman.
Yeah. Who has acquitted himself very well so far this year.
By the way, West Virginia's kicker is named Casey Legg.
Legg.
L-E-G-G. That's the aptly
kinda,
named Casey
kinda
Legg.
Kind of have to grow up and be a kicker. Yeah. I'm like Chris Blewett. Like, why would he ever become a kicker?
Why would he ever? Ryan Suckup.
Suckup.
Yeah.
David, want to go to you. What's your key to the game for the Hokies?
Outside of getting off to a fast start, which I think is a key to every single game for the end of time.
Except for Middle Tennessee, apparently.
Well... Yeah. Because, I mean, you can always say a team needs to get off to a fast start. I think it's going to be a very sloppy kind of game. You know, I think as we saw and as I wrote in my part of the preview, Virginia Tech and Braxton Burmeister on offense, they have a couple drives. You know, they've had a couple drives in both of the games so far. And then after, outside of those drives, it was kind of just, you know, we're going to move the ball. We might get a first down, but we're going to punt it back to you. And I think it's take advantage of the opportunities you have and then make sure you play the field position game really, really well. Because Peter Moore, I wanted to hit on Peter Moore. He's got eight punts so far this season. Three punts have been over 50 yards.
Yeah.
He's completely, you know, flipped the game on its side so far this season, and he's got four punts inside the 20. Yeah. So yeah. If Virginia Tech, I think it's going to come down to, can Virginia Tech stop West Virginia on the defensive side? But Virginia Tech offensively needs to, I think, kind of do what they did against North Carolina, which is give the offense needs to give the defense a little bit breathing room. And if Tech offense does get into a tough situation where they do have to punt it back, you know, if Peter Moore can pin West Virginia inside the 10-yard line, yeah. you know, and the defense can go to work and, you know, hold them, maybe allow 10, 15 yards, but then, you know, get the ball back. I mean, those are the plays that are going to win you games. I think it just needs – it's not going to be a pretty game, I don't think. You're not going to see Tech come out and – you know, maybe you'll see Tech run for a good amount, but I don't think you'll see Tech sling the ball around. Yeah, exactly. It's not going to, I don't think it's going to be a high scoring game, you know, and I think Tech's defense will come to play and play pretty well, but in a hostile environment on the road for, like we said, you know, for a lot of the younger guys, you know, you have Caden Moore and Dorian Strong and Keonta Jenkins, but outside of that, you know, pretty much everybody's played in a road atmosphere before. You know, it's going to be just buckling down and making sure you do the little things right, I think. Like, making sure when, in terms of field position, that, like, you know, Oscar Shadley goes up to Peter Moore and says, hey, you know, don't think about the fans that are throwing batteries at you before you go and try to pin West Virginia in their own 15. You know what I mean? I think it's those types of plays that are going to win Tech the game.
Well, I think that's something that Tech has done really well in the first two games. They've limited the mistakes, and they haven't given up short fields. I think that could be key against West Virginia as well.
Yeah, so Virginia Tech is second in the nation, tied for second in the nation at 2.5 penalties per game. And they're up there in turnover margin. Tech is plus one per game through two games. And these are the hidden yardage, the intangibles. WVU averages five penalties a game to 2.5 for Tech. So it's not like WVU is a train wreck. They're not going to give you 8 to 10 penalties unless they play a different kind of ball game.
They're more than welcome to.
Yeah, have at it. You know, turn it over four times and commit 15 penalties.
Well, we've gone through the matchup with the Hokies and the Mountaineers, but I want to take a trip back down memory lane, look at past matchups. I'm just going to sit back and get a history lesson from you guys, because the only Tech WVU game I remember is the 2017 FedEx Field game. So I'm going to say your favorite memory cannot be Shane Graham, but outside
fair,
of that,
fair, yeah.
what is your favorite memory of the Tech-West Virginia rivalry?
I'm totally divided between the 2004 and the 2005 game. 2004 game was at home. It was my senior year of college. So I was there for it. 2005 was kind of redemption because you knew, obviously, you remembered what happened up there 2 years before, and you knew you weren't going to be playing them again for a while. And if they had beaten Tech that year and taken the Black Diamond Trophy, you would have been like, oh my God, when are we going to get a chance to win this thing back?
Yeah.
So I would honestly, I would probably go 2005 because of that. And I would normally not approve of a Virginia Tech player doing this on national television, but I thought the Marcus Vick moment was one of the greatest moments in Virginia Tech football history. I have no doubt that whoever that was directed towards absolutely deserved it. No question in my mind.
Yeah. For me, it wasn't 2005. Let's see. I mean, when you say WVU, I think of Wayne Ward. Do you remember the guy's name?
Kyle Caden. I was at that game. I was a senior in high school. That was my first ever Virginia Tech West Virginia game. And Tech was losing that game at halftime, 14-7, and then they won it 48-20.
Yeah, they blew up on him. Andre Davis scored three touchdowns on three different kinds of plays. It was an end around, a reception, and a punt return.
And it was all in like 5 minutes.
It was in a very I think I put it on YouTube at one point. Right. So,
and throwing the 80-yard touchdown pass to Bob Slowakowski of all people.
Right.
Right. I mean, it was like halftime, West Virginia's winning, and I'm sitting there like, Tech's going to win by at least 20. This is what we do. I was not concerned at all. And then the avalanche came in the second half.
But the funny thing about it, you look at the Wayne Ward hit on Kyle Caden or whatever his name was, and, oh, man, they would throw Wayne Ward out of the stadium these days.
Oh, yeah.
But if you can hear the audio, Tirico's calling it. That was a game.
That was a Thursday night game.
Yeah. Thursday night game, Tirico and Herb Street and Lee Corso. And Tirico's calling it. And at the point where Wayne Ward hits Kyle Caden – I think you can hear Lee Corso cuss. you have to listen closely, but so that's one of my favorite moments. Now, there's a game I don't quite remember. It was, I think, 1990, and Tech had a hideous. David, can you look up Virginia Tech's 1990 schedule?
1990. That was 26-21 Virginia Tech won in Blacksburg.
No, you're thinking about the one in Morgantown with Major. 89.
Yeah. Well, it may be 91 I'm thinking about where Tech had a goal line stand.
So 89 was 12-10 in Morgantown.
Yeah. That was when West Virginia was ranked in the top 10. That was Frank's first
Yes, West Virginia was number 9.
And that was nobody knew that Virginia Tech could ever do anything good because Frank had gone 5-17 his first two years. And that was early in the year. I didn't even listen to it. I remember I was over at a friend's house, and I was just like, yeah, I'm not listening to that mess because they had Major Harris. They were ranked 9th in the country. They had played.
Tech was 2-1-1 at that time.
Okay, so all right. I don't remember. I think West Virginia, I don't think they played for a national championship the year before, but I think they played in the Fiesta Bowl against Notre Dame.
Well, they went unbeaten the year before, and I think. Yeah.
And brought Major Harris back, who was a great quarterback. But then, like, I don't know, my buddy of mine came in and he's, you know, we didn't have cell phones back then, but I somehow got the words like, yeah, Tech's winning 12-10. It's late in the game. So Mickey Thomas kicked 4 field goals, and that was
when games weren't on TV, so you couldn't.
Yeah, but, you know, you had to listen to it on the radio, you know. So that was 89. 90 was in Blacksburg, I guess. And 91 is probably one I'm remembering where I think that game was also stopped by a lightning strike for, like, an hour.
99 was Virginia Tech won 20-14 in Morgantown.
91, you mean?
91, yeah. Yeah. 20-14.
I'm pretty sure that was the one where it was fourth and goal, and Virginia Tech defensive tackle forced a fumble to win the game.
Mm. Well, obviously a lot of history in this rivalry. One of the two trophy games for the Hokies, obviously the other Commonwealth Cup. Yeah. But this has only been played once in the last 15 years. Is this still one of the top rivalries for Virginia Tech?
I mean, to me, it's certainly one of the top three. I mean, Virginia's in state, so I guess you have to put them number one. Carolina's in there because I think they're the complete antithesis of everything Virginia Tech is, and because they're a recruiting rival. West Virginia is a unique rival in that their fan base actually cares about football.
Yeah.
Carolina fan base, I mean, they got a few that do, but generally speaking, they pay football lip service. And they just don't care about it. Right. And how do you look at the crowd? I mean, UVA's got a good football coach now. They're a well-coached football team. And you look at their crowd this past weekend with Illinois there, and it's like, where are they at? I think the latter stages of the Al Groh era and entire Mike London era, I don't think their fan base will ever recover from that bad football. And they just don't go to games anymore, and they aren't passionate. Now, West Virginia is passionate, and that's what makes this rivalry unique. I will say that I don't think they're Tech's biggest rival because I think UNC's Tech's biggest villain. I think UVA's Tech's biggest rival because of the in-state nature. I think the West Virginia rivalry is the most fun because their fans care about football.
And
those
they have long
don't.
Memories.
This game,
I'm guessing, this game is a big deal to them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a big deal to a lot of Tech fans, but probably not all Tech fans.
Right. Oh, there are a number of Tech fans that don't want to play it. I mean, this game means more to West Virginia fans than it does Tech fans. I'll say, not to me. It means a lot to me. I don't like West Virginia, of course, but I'm thankful for West Virginia because they provide the emotion that I think it's what college football is all about. Yeah. I mean, what do you want to play Rutgers every week and Boston College every week and Middle Tennessee? And no, you have to have some games like this. And it's one of those games where, you know, if Tech wins it, we're going to sit here on Monday and we're going to analyze and strengths and weaknesses and blah, blah, blah. I'll be equally thrilled if Tech won 49-42 or 2-0. You know, I don't care. Just win the game.
Right. And so for me, it goes – I mean, they had a great rivalry in the Big East days.
Oh, yeah.
For me, it goes further back than that. If you go back into the 80s when Bill Dooley was coaching, Bill's schedule was – there were 11 games back then if you didn't go to a bowl. And it was 8 or 9 games against just boring teams. And then there were the 1 or 2 or 3 games that mattered. UVA was always one of them. They would play Clemson here or there, and that one mattered, and West Virginia. Mm-hmm. Those were the games that mattered. There were very few of them back then, and West Virginia was right there. And it was frustrating because they were a really good program, and I'd have to go back and look at it, but I think West Virginia won most of those games.
They lead the all-time series.
Yeah, they do 28-23. Yes. And I think Tech has won something like 6 out of the last 9.
Yep. So Tech's actually won 3 of the last 4 in Morgantown.
Yes.
The one we lost, we remember. Now, 2 of those 3 that we won, we remember, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and the Hokies are 2-0. So even outside the rivalry, this is a big game for Virginia Tech. I feel like the fan base as a whole is kind of trying to manage expectations right now. Say it's 2 games in. Do you think if Tech beats West Virginia on the road, those expectations start to rise?
I don't think there's any question.
Especially with Notre Dame coming up.
The
in a couple
anticipation
weeks.
For the Notre Dame game ramps up. I mean, this is all about setting, assuming you're going to beat Richmond. This is all about setting the table for that WVU game. Excuse me, the Notre Dame game. You get past this game and you're 3-0, then you've got Richmond and you've got a week off. That's 3 more weeks for you to go up in the rankings and for ESPN or whoever's got – oh, the ACC Network has the rights to that game.
They right. do. But I don't want to get ahead of myself, but that – it could be a top 10 matchup.
Congratulations, everyone who has Comcast. Yeah, imagine if it's like number 8 Notre Dame, number 10 Virginia Tech.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I can't watch it because I don't have Comcast.
If Tech wins against West Virginia, you've got an FCS team in Richmond the next week and then a bye week.
Yeah.
So that's plenty of opportunity for teams above Virginia Tech to lose. Yep. Again, it could be a top 10 matchup against Notre Dame if the Hokies get through this one.
That's it is. And that's the weird thing is, like, to me, though, like, I'm so focused on this game, like, Notre Dame might as well be on the moon.
It feels like it's a long way off.
It does.
It's October.
Especially with the bye week. So we'll see, but this obviously a big game for Virginia Tech and their expectations for the season. So we will see where it goes. I think it's a good time to hop into the YouTube questions, David.
Well, we got to do our predictions first.
Okay.
We never explicitly said.
I guess we never said.
Never explicitly said.
Well, we went over keys. We didn't actually.
Yeah. Yes.
I think I picked, I'm not going to pick West Virginia to beat Virginia Tech. You know, I kind of see this game as a toss-up, so.
You used to do that with Boston College.
Do you want me to tell? Year. I can tell. I can confirm what you put in
I think
your
I picked 20-17 Virginia Tech, right?
Yes.
I read through it. All of you were pretty much within 10 points of each other.
I picked 24.
You said 20-17.
Yeah.
I said 24-20, and I thought
you did.
I thought I picked a low scoring game.
That sounds awfully high scoring to me.
And I said 17-13.
Right,
and wouldn't surprise me if that was the final
score.
No,
and I don't want to damper anybody's enthusiasms. But you remember how I said I almost changed my pick, like after I wrote my preview for UNC.
Yeah,
and like if I hadn't already written it, I probably would have done it. I almost changed it last night. Like, I almost went back and picked West Virginia last night.
What did you see or think that made you?
I just keep thinking that like, these guys, like redshirt senior Sean Mahone and their senior middle linebacker who played so poorly against Maryland last year or a couple weeks ago, but they were so good for the entirety of last season.
Yeah.
Like, I've got to think that their performances against Maryland was kind of a one-off thing, and they're not going to do
like,
that again.
Like a fluke a little bit.
Yeah, or maybe or just there's a like I say, you're teething with a new safeties coach, you know, and not everybody's comfortable with each other yet, and they should be more comfortable with each other now. So I almost went back and changed my pick. I wish I had done it for the UNC game because by Wednesday I thought Tech was probably going to win the game, but I didn't do it. And so I picked Tech 24-21. This morning and last night, I'm like, I think West Virginia's going to win. But now that we've talked about them for an hour and a half, I think Tech's going to win again. You know, so I might change my mind again between Friday. But I picked it 24-20 Tech, so I guess I have to stick with that.
All right.
You guys have been unanimous on picks all 3 weeks.
We're not separating at all.
And I
knew he was going to pick Tech.
Oh, yeah.
And I was hoping you would pick West Virginia just so one of us would be different.
One would pull ahead.
Yeah.
I just haven't been impressed. Before we get into your question, I have one question for you, Chris. You mentioned how a lot of, like, this game might not mean as much for Tech fans as it does for West Virginia fans. Do you think it's maybe because it's at West Virginia, and when Tech plays at West Virginia or here against West Virginia next year, do you think Tech fans are going to care more about it, or do you think it's just the way the rivalry is?
You're young, so you don't read the message boards very much.
Oh, I do.
You see it on our boards. The people, there are some people that just don't think we should be playing the game at all.
Oh yeah, I've
that
seen
we that we never should have.
Nobody at West Virginia is saying that kind of thing.
Nobody for West Virginia says that.
They want to play.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I mean by that. Okay. Yeah.
All right. I've wrote down five questions, and I think they're pretty good questions. First one from Eric Fisher. What do you guys think is the cause for our lack of wide receiver production? Do guys have a low ceiling? Is it coaching or is it scheme?
Part of it's physicality, just pure strength, size and strength.
Yeah. I mean, Trey's just still a skinny guy.
Yeah.
He's kind of the same size as he was as a true freshman.
Weighs 190, yeah. Which is pretty much.
Caleb Smith is a really good blocker. Tavion's a really – here's the thing, though, man. Two of those three starting receivers are awesome blockers. So I don't think it's a physicality thing.
Yeah, solid point.
Trey's best play – I would line Trey up in the slot where they can't get up in his face and take advantage of their strength advantage. I mean, I know it doesn't make sense having a 6'2 slot and a 5'9 outside receiver, but Tavion's the stronger, more physical player, I think. I don't know. You look all around it, and you see guys at other positions who have improved a lot. You know, I guess we probably talked about this on Monday's podcast.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't see as much improvement at the wide receiver position as I do the other positions. And Tech's previous receivers did improve, but, you know, two of their previous wide receiver coaches were, you know, Holman Wiggins, who's now at Alabama, and Aaron Moorhead, who's now the wide receivers coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. So, I mean, I think we're about to start the third game of the season, so I don't want to really draw complete conclusions until after the season, because, look, there was two or three years into Vance Vice's tenure, I was not sold on Vance Vice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I later became sold on Vance Vice. So I'm not quick to jump the gun on things like that, but I think I'll know by the end of the season.
Yeah.
Jacob Yates asks, do you think we'll see a similar game plan for West Virginia as we did with North Carolina? Barno dropping to spy, clock management on offense, more man coverage.
I don't think so. I think you'll see an attempt made to put more pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Play some man coverage and put some pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, they were scared of – they not scared, but they respected Sam Howell's abilities. And, you know, I think Diggy's a good player, but – and I'm not saying Sam Howell's a speed demon, but he's not anywhere near the threat Sam Howell is, you know, as a runner.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be anything like that.
Well, offensively, do you think the tempo will be similar to North Carolina, or do you think that they ramp it up a little bit, not as worried about that West Virginia offense coming on the field?
I mean, I don't think they're going to go in there with a hurry up. I'll put it that way. I think it'll be somewhere between a balanced tempo and a slow tempo.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be a deliberate effort to slow things down.
Braxton Burmeister is probably not going to run over the sideline after every single play.
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trevor Mays asks, what do you think is the biggest concern so far this season that has not been talked about enough?
That has not been talked about. Oh, God. Have we not talked about everything 2 weeks in the season yet? Well, I'm not going to say this is a concern. We don't know whether it's just an unknown. Can John Parker Romo kick a big field goal if he needs to? We don't know. He had kicked a really long one against North Carolina, which is great, but then he missed a really short one, which you know, made it a one-possession game there at the end. So if he has to kick a 40-yard field goal this Saturday to win the game, can he do it?
I
think one thing we really haven't talked about much, and Chris, you've looked at PFF grades and things like that, is how good is the offensive line, really? We know last year's offensive line was outstanding. Mm-hmm. And Khalil Herbert's the kind of guy that when you open a hole, he'll make you look even better.
Mm-hmm.
How good is the offensive line, really?
Yeah.
You lost the first round pick up front.
So the thing is, man, running backs, to me, I think a running back for the running game is more important than an offensive line. And I've slowly developed that. I used to not think that way when I was a kid. But, like, as I've gotten older, and I think back on that 2006 season when that Tech offensive line couldn't block air and Brandon Orr still ran for, like, 1,200 yards.
Well, not only that, but you look at some of the lines that Ryan Williams ran behind.
The line that David Wilson ran behind wasn't all that great.
Yeah.
2011, he was just a better athlete than everybody else on the field.
Just last year watching that offensive line and thinking, man, put Brian Williams.
I think there are going to be times this year. I think this Tech offensive line is still one of the best offensive lines Tech has had.
Yeah.
But I think there are going to be times where fans who believe the opposite of me, that think the offensive line is more important than the running back, where they're going to say, this line isn't any good. Well, they just don't have Khalil Herbert anymore. You know, all an offensive line can do is get the running back to the unblocked hat. And they do that a pretty good number of times. And Khalil Herbert always made that unblocked hat miss.
Well, the very first play, the very first running play of the Middle Tennessee game, I wrote this in my column. It wasn't an issue of somebody missing a block. It was every I think there were five blockers and six defenders, and that defender knifed in and took Blackshear down for a 1 yard loss.
Right.
Now I'm not saying Herbert would have done better, but that's it. It was the 1-on-1 and Blackshear didn't win it.
Right.
John Joyce asks, is the playbook fully open for this game, or does Virginia Tech hold back for conference play?
I
think it's
fully open. Oh, God, no. I mean, they held back last week.
I think,
and to me, they held back last week because they've done a lot more film study of West Virginia than you would realize.
Yeah.
And I think West Virginia coaches did the exact same thing. I'm sure they did. They played Long Island. All they would show up.
And they won 66-0.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're not going to hold anything back now at this point in the season.
Right.
Let's do one more.
Chet Morse asks, Braxton seems to progress through his reads well, but often doesn't have an open man. In your opinion, is this more the guys and their routes or the play call itself?
Wide receivers didn't have trouble getting open with Brad Cornelson's plays when they had Isaiah Ford and Cam Phillips and Bucky Hodges, and Holman Wiggins was the wide receivers coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's the plays. I think Tech's receivers are less likely to win a 1-on-1 battle these days, which makes scheming guys open. And I've decided, and you know, somebody said this on the boards this week that, you know, we use the phrase smoke and mirrors offense so much that people are starting to, like, take it as a negative. And I never viewed it as a negative. I viewed it as a positive.
I call it misdirection.
Right, yeah. So I'm not going to stop using that because some people think we're being negative when we use it. I'm actually not. But people take it that way, so we're going to stop using the phrase. And there has to be more scheming open of guys these days. But the thing is, like, there's – like, football has been played for over 100 years now. There's only so many schemes out there and things like that. I mean, it's not – I mean, these coaches, I mean, they all get paid 6 and 7 figures depending on what kind of coach you are. And it's their job. It's what they do every day. You know, I mean, you're not going to fool too many people. I mean, coaches use the cliche, generic cliche that it's about execution more than anything else, and it's true.
So I shouldn't take my VCR tape of the Maryland-West Virginia game and mail it to Coach Fuente?
Did y'all know that story? I know you don't know that story. But you'll appreciate this as a former Tech Talk Live translator. This was back when Tech was still in the Big East, and I don't know the opponent, but I'm going to say it was Syracuse just for the sake of argument. And this guy called into the show, and it was like, Coach Beamer, I know y'all got a big game coming up this weekend against Syracuse. And I tell you what, I taped their game this past Saturday on my VCR. And if you feel like you need to watch them a little bit before you actually get out and play them, I can make a copy of it and mail it to you. And it should get there a couple days before the game. I'm serious. This was an actual –
That actually happened.
That actually happened.
This is when I'm sure they used to allow people to call into TTO.
Right.
And that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the best decisions they ever made.
So I guess they weren't screening that night. They were just – punching buttons and letting people through.
That may have been a lot of reasons why they stopped doing it.
I remember that now. There's been a few others too, where it's just cringeworthy. Like I think this was a Tech Talk Live when the woman called in and asked Jim Weaver about she's never heard of Metallica, and she thought Enter Sandman was called Enter the Sandbag, and she had never heard of it, and. This stuff used to happen, and people wonder why they don't let fans ask questions on the radio anymore.
Lays will say, if you have a question, tweet it at me. I think that's a better way to do it. That way Lays can screen it out instead of just having somebody pop on
the
show.
That's absolutely the best way to do it. That's why we have our screener over here.
There we go. Yeah. I want to touch on one thing from that last question before we get out of here. With some of these plays, Braxton Burmeister going through his reads, do you think there may be a lack of trust to throw that 50-50 ball to Turner or Robinson
down
the field?
That's part of it.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And there's been a couple times where he's been late seeing things, or maybe he did see them and they just decided not to throw it. But sometimes he probably does need to maybe throw guys open a little bit more. I don't know. They got to work on it, for sure. I think after last week with two games under their belts, they have a better idea of what they need to work on now and figure out what everybody's comfortable with. But and it's still only two games into the season, but my general opinion is that the biggest changes in the passing game from – like if you want wholesale huge improvement, I don't think they can happen until the off season.
Yep.
And certain things that could potentially happen then, which I don't want to get into right now because I don't want to talk about it for the next 3 months because it might not even happen. So what's the point?
Sure. Well, that is going to do it for our West Virginia preview, episode 191 of the Tech Sideline podcast. Before we get out of here, Chris, David, what's coming up on TechSideline.com before the game on Saturday?
Oh, man. We are having Inside the Numbers tomorrow, which is a look at Tywan Garbutt's performance against Middle Tennessee, which I'll give you a hint, was one of the best grading performances of the PFF era defensively. Wow. At
of
Virginia
whole
Tech.
Time.
Yeah, like one of the That's top crazy. One of the top 10. Yeah.
As Muhammad Ali, you
say, Taiwan is back,
time.
Baby.
Yep. Friday Q&A on Friday. Brandon Patterson will have a look ahead to West Virginia with some game film and things like that.
Now, Brandon's article should be interesting.
Yeah, it should. Yeah. David's?
I'm writing a story with some quotes. We got to talk to Connor Blumrick yesterday for the first time. I thought he was actually pretty interesting, so I'm going to write some stuff on him. And a note on the ACC Network tonight at 7 and tomorrow at 7. Tonight, the women's basketball ACC schedule is being released, and tomorrow the men's schedule is being released, so maybe a basketball schedule story on Friday.
And we'll touch on the schedule on Monday's podcast as well when we recap West Virginia. Preview for West Virginia already up on TechSideline.com, and that is free for students. Want to mention that again. And I believe first month free if you sign up now on TechSideline.com.
Yeah, so our game previews are free, and the stuff David does from the game previews have polls in them to kind of predict how much you think Tech will win by or if the opponent will win. So always pile in and vote on that. We had like, I think, 1,800 votes in last week's poll. And as you can imagine, something like 90% of them picked Tech to win.
I believe they were right.
11 plus. Yeah, that was a toughie. So I lost track. Oh, yeah. So student subscriptions are free. Your monthly subscriptions the first month is free. And, you know, I'll admit we haven't done a huge job of promoting that. I'll get around to it, you know.
Try and throw it in there every other podcast here before we get into games. Right. Well, that's going to do it for episode 191 of the Tech Sideline podcast. We broke down the West Virginia game. Want to let you know where you can find everybody on social media. Will Stewart, founder and general manager of TechSideline.com. You can find him at Will Stewart TSL on Twitter. To my left, lead analyst and columnist Chris Coleman at TechSideline.com, at Chris Coleman TSL. And then David Cunningham, our managing editor, is at The Real DeKunna. I'm at Lyman Jake on Twitter as well. That is going to do it for episode 191 of the Tech Sideline podcast, brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center, getting you set for West Virginia and Virginia Tech from Morgantown on Saturday. We hope you enjoy the game, Hokies fans, and we'll talk to you on Monday.